This winter, experience a night in the company of one of the world's greatest orchestras. Led by Andras Nelson's, the Boston Symphony Orchestra returns with spectacular programs, including music from Beethoven, Dvorak, Debussy, Mozart, Helen Grime, Thomas Addis, and more. Make a date with excellence at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Book now. Call 888-266-1200 or visit bso.org.
In this week's profile, Mark Coles looks at the life and career of the man behind one of the world's biggest companies.
Have you ever met him?
No, nobody gets to meet him. It's like meeting the Wizard of Oz or meeting, you know, an emperor who is untouchable.
We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. We hear he is.
Nobody gets to meet the chairman. With Samsung, it's really all about protecting the leader and protecting his reputation and making sure that outsiders do not figure out the inner lives of this circle.
Not the easiest of profiles this week. Our subject, hopefully waiting for us at the end of the yellow brick road, is Lee Kun-hee, the 74-year-old head of the South Korean tech giant Samsung, in the news or under fire this week for its exploding phones. This is one of their new Galaxy Note 7 phones, apparently catching fire and exploding in a South Korean Burger King restaurant recently. Several dozen more around the world are reported to have self-combusted too, since the phone first went on sale in August.
Samsung has announced that it has permanently discontinued production of its new Galaxy Note 7 smartphone after some handsets caught fire.
Scrapping the device is expected to cost Samsung more than $5 billion. The chairman's net worth fell more than a billion in 2 days alone this week. Not that there's been any response from him. Lee Kun-hee hasn't been seen in public since suffering a heart attack 2 years ago. The advice from BBC's Seoul correspondent Steve Evans, forget it. Mission impossible.
This man is immensely powerful. In 2006... Samsung would have been the world's 35th largest economy, for example. Yet he has no public profile. I'm not aware that he's ever given an interview. He certainly doesn't do press conferences that I'm aware of. Whatever allegations and claims and information swirls around him, it becomes a private issue.
So a different sort of profile this week. No family members, no close friends, no work associates. In fact, unusually for us, we haven't spoken to a single person who has ever met the man. Clearly a bit of an enigma. We have to head back to the 1930s for the start of his and Samsung's story. Back to 1938, 4 years before Lee Kun-hee was born, when his father founded a small trading company. The name Samsung, meaning three stars, chosen because his father wanted his company to become big, powerful and everlasting, like stars in the sky. The journalist Jeffrey Kane, who's writing a book all about Samsung.
Chairman Lee Byung-chul, the founding father of Samsung, started a range of companies in the 1930s and 40s, and one of them was a rice mill and a grocery store named Samsung. And that is really the company that has evolved into the Samsung that we know.
The Korean War almost put paid to Samsung before it had begun. Lee Kun-hee was 8 when Seoul was invaded and occupied by communist North Korea in 1950. His parents nearly lost everything, Lee spending his early years in Japan.
He spent a lot of his childhood in Japan, learning Japanese ways. He was a loner who spent time at his house watching films. He cultivated this style, this personality that was a bit distant during those early years.
By the time he graduated with a degree in economics, the family firm was prospering, enough to invest in a couple of subsidiaries, which effectively marked the start of the family-run Samsung conglomerate. The BBC's Steve Evans.
The Korean way of business is chaebols.
Excuse me?
And that's another word for huge conglomerates owned and run by a family. Samsung is the biggest chaebol. South Korea is sometimes called the Republic of Samsung.
Lee Kun-hee joined the family conglomerate at the end of the 1960s, just as it was launching its new electronics subsidiary, unashamedly aimed at the cut price market.
People that you meet out on the street are choosing Samsung.
When his father died in 1987, even though he was the youngest son, it was Lee that took over as chairman. The chosen one, says Aidan Foster Carter, career expert at the University of Leeds.
He had enormous business acumen, and I think his father had spotted that early on. He'd proved himself before his father died, and so he was the one chosen to take over.
Within months, he was starting to change things, according to Steve Evans.
When he took over in 1987, Samsung was low cost, make 'em cheap, sell 'em fast. He took the decision that that wasn't the way to make real money, that it had to go up in quality to increase the profit margin. And he's widely credited with the phrase, change everything except your wife and kids.
But on a trip to the US, Jeffrey Kane says Chairman Lee soon realised the scale of the task ahead.
In Los Angeles, he was walking around and he would see, for example, that Samsung products were the marked down, discounted products, and Sony and these other big name companies were really the ones who were killing everyone.
So, in 1993, he called his top executives together, gathered 200 of them in a hotel in the German city of Frankfurt, and, at some length, laid out his vision for the future.
He spent 3 days making these grand speeches and proclamations, telling them to change everything, telling his employees, his executives, that they have to do everything different. He was aggressive about it, he was a visionary about it, but he made it clear that the way things are now are not going to work.
His speeches went on for 3 days.
Yes, with a total of 8,500 pages worth of transcripts from all the speeches he was giving. You know, as the company lore says, he wouldn't even go to the bathroom. He would just talk and talk and talk and have all these ideas.
Andrew Saunders is deputy editor of the business magazine Management Today.
He is the architect of the company as it stands today, and he saw the opportunity that was presented by the digital age for companies to leapfrog existing consumer electronics giants. Their first target was Sony. They wanted to be out Sony. And they did that by concentrating on producing quality goods, and Mr. Lee was one of the first bosses of one of the first kind of Asian companies to really understand the importance not only of quality but also of marketing.
But when he proudly sent Samsung mobile phones as Christmas presents to some of his friends back in 1995, only to find several returned them saying they didn't work, Lee was furious.
He was just devastated by this because he had told his employees to make better phones and they still weren't doing it. So in the spring of 1995, he organized a mass bonfire in the town of Gumi in South Korea. He took fax machines, phones, just anything that Samsung was making that was poor quality, and they threw it into piles. And then at the start of this ritual, a small handful of employees at the front lit a bonfire of all these products, and then they brought a bulldozer to raise the rest of it just to drive it home.
The workers cried to see their pride and joy, but evidently not good enough for the chairman.
Aidan Foster Carter.
$50 million worth of kit got smashed that day. And the workers all had to wear headbands saying quality first.
It marked a turning point. Over the next decade, the emphasis was firmly on quality, not cut price. Andrew Saunders.
One of the senior execs that I spoke to once in Korea a few years ago, he said to me that we are driven in Korea by a very strong sense of crisis. And I think that is responsible for the amazing speed at which Samsung keeps moving. They embrace the future because, to a certain extent, they want to get away from the past. And that is also a legacy of Mr. Lee's management style. He is pretty authoritarian. It's quite an authoritarian company. It's very hierarchical.
Michael Kim was a senior manager at Samsung in Seoul between 2008 and 2010.
Every morning there is a broadcast played internally on television sets. There usually be a piece about some comments that he made about some business issue. So his presence was definitely felt within the company. Those kind of briefings were meant to, I think, motivate employees. Finding a new growth engine for the company was a very popular theme for the morning broadcast.
New recruits were expected to study their boss, given books of his business quotes to digest. The entire Samsung workforce expected to take part in team-building organised fun.
large groups of employees getting in formation and dancing to music and making formations of the company logo, company products of smartphones, of handsets, of TVs, shouting corporate slogans, extolling the virtues of Samsung, talking about how proud they are in Samsung. And the other country that's most well known for doing this is North Korea.
Everyone was wearing the same color uniforms. I just had this weird feeling that I'm not in a democratic state.
Whether team games or morning broadcast, it seemed to pay off.
The Samsung Galaxy S, that's the wonder of Samsung.
In the space of a few years, culminating in the 2010 launch of its flagship Galaxy S series of mobile phones, one of the first Android devices to enjoy huge global success, Samsung had gone from bargain basement to top of the range, now the 11th most valuable brand on the planet, according to Forbes magazine. But in 2008, Lee Kun-hee stood down as Samsung chairman after being convicted of tax evasion. This is a rare appearance and apology in public.
We, including myself, have caused troubles for the nation. I deeply apologise for that. And I'll take full responsibility for everything, both legally and morally.
Michael Kim was working at Samsung at the time.
I thought it was a very concerning issue. When I spoke to my colleagues about it, they seemed to be very unconcerned. And when I asked why, the impression that I got was that they believed that he would be pardoned, that they didn't think any of this would stick to him.
And they were right. Within months, he was pardoned by South Korea's president, no less. And in 2010, he resumed his position back at the head of the Samsung empire. Jeffrey Kane again.
That really shows you just how indispensable he is to the nation of South Korea. He's someone who is the wealthiest person who runs the crown jewel of the nation, and he's not the type of person who can be messed with in that way at a lot of times.
By 2010, Forbes had Lee Kun-hee listed as the 100th wealthiest person in the world, his net worth estimated today at $14 billion, give or take the cost of an exploding phone or two. Samsung responsible for more than a fifth of South Korea's entire annual GDP, which creates its own set of problems, according to Aidan Foster Carter.
Samsung behaves as if what's good for Samsung is good for South Korea, and it's been able to do so hitherto in the knowledge that no government, even though occasionally they talk about curbing the power of the chaebol, there's a pervasive sense that they are too big and they are too powerful, but no one seems successfully able to challenge them.
But for the last 2 years, Chairman Lee has been conspicuous in his absence. Bedridden or hospitalised is the official line after suffering a heart attack in 2014. He's not been seen in public since. Some Korean newspapers and online news sites actually questioning whether he's still alive. The BBC's Steve Evans.
There was some speculation about how seriously ill, whether, for example, he was in a coma. But he has been seen to be breathing and alert in a hospital bed since then.
Whatever his medical condition, career expert Aidan Carter-Foster says it's obvious Lee Kun-hee isn't in direct charge, unlikely to have had much, if any, involvement in the Galaxy Note 7 crisis or the decision this week to kill off the phone.
Oh, he would be absolutely fuming. It is obviously a very, very serious blow.
But how serious? The BBC's Steve Evans believes the next few weeks could prove critical.
There's the immediate cost that has to be paid, some billions of dollars. But there's also the brand name. We don't know how that'll play out, but it's become a figure of fun. The joke going round is Samsung's got one up on Apple. It's got a phone with a built-in heater. If it's a one-off and they come up with a shiny new model that works quite quickly, well then, they march on. But if they don't and the jokes continue, well, then it's tainted. There's no other way of looking at it.
Profile was presented by Mark Coles. The producer was Smita Patel.
This winter, experience a night in the company of one of the world's greatest orchestras. Led by Andras Nelson's, the Boston Symphony Orchestra returns with spectacular programs, including music from Beethoven, Dvorak, Debussy, Mozart, Helen Grimm, Thomas Addis, and more. Make a date with excellence at the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Book now. Call 888-266-1200 or visit bso.org.